Hi, everybody. Dan Hirschberg here with Play Ball, and we are going to play ball right now with Nick Massett, Pinellas Park native. And Nick, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Dan.
Yeah.
We're looking forward to it.
Yeah. So for those people who may not know much about you, tell a little bit of background. You grew up in Pinellas Park, went to the high school there, and what else can you tell us about high school?
Started there. Born and raised Pinellas Park, went to Pinellas Park High School, really, you know, hit the ground running in probably my sophomore, junior year when things started coming together. Played baseball my whole life, and at that time started realizing I might be able to, I don't want to say make a career out of it, but have some potential, you know, at the higher levels. And after my junior year, just started throwing a lot harder. And you know, those were back in the good old days when you kind of had to teach yourself, and there wasn't all the you know, special, you know, I'd say, you know, like the special treatment and online, you know, mimicking of different, you know, teachings and whatnot. But ultimately, my father is the one who really guided me and helped me, you know, keep my head straight and work hard and, you know, do everything that I needed to do to bring the best potential out of myself. And, you know, after that junior year is when I started going to the different showcases, like the Perfect Game Showcase, the, I think the Northeast or Northeast Regional was invited to that, and really did well in those tournaments and showcased myself well. And then all the phone calls started flooding in from there. I think I was the number one prospect out of the Perfect Game Showcase and throwing 95, 96 miles an hour as you know, a junior going into my senior year.
And that's pretty good.
So, yeah, you know, especially back then. Nowadays, it seems like everyone's throwing that hard. But, no, it just kind of came about throughout all the hard work. You know, worked with, you know, my pitching coach at Pinellas Park High School at the time and really built myself up, built my strength up. And then the downfall happens the second game of my high school season, and that's when I had blown my elbow out with Tommy John. Second game of the high school season. That was after I had committed to LSU.
This was as a senior we're talking about.
Yeah, yeah, going into my senior year, I had committed to LSU, had a scholarship to go there, and was really thinking about doing that. And then after hurting my arm, that was a big downfall for me because, you know, you're just an average kid playing baseball, and then you get to the top of the, you know, you feel like you're at the top of the peak when everyone says you're going to be, you know, top 10 picks in the country at the time. And, you know, so that really, really hurt me, you know, was pretty disheartening at the time. And luckily had great mentors such as Hank Sargent was my agent at the time and was my agent throughout my whole career, who was a quality mentor of mine. Larry Mayo, which I'm sure you've heard of.
Sure.
You know, Larry was the guy that I rehabbed with and was able to get me back. And I trained with him throughout my whole career as well. Always came back home, trained with him throughout those 15, 16 years.
And he's still active.
And he's still active. Pretty sure he still straps on the gear and gets behind the plate and catches the kids these days. But he was a wonderful mentor of mine, someone I could always go to, you know, not just baseball, but outside of baseball, and really keep me and have a level head and taught me a lot of things. So between my father, Hank Sargent, Larry Mayo, you know, I give so much credit to them for you know, everything that they had taught me. And and then from there, of course, had the Tommy John surgery, was still drafted in the 8th round by the Texas Rangers. That's when the draft and follow was around. Didn't sign, decided I'm, you know, get myself healthy, prove myself to come back. And that's when I went to St. Pete Junior College at the time.
Right.
And went and pitched with them for the season and decided to either go back in the draft or sign as a draft and follow. And that's when I signed as a draft and follow by the Texas Rangers.
Yep. So just getting back to your dad, did he play baseball? Or?
So he went to Bishop Berry, which is now Tampa Catholic, I'm pretty sure. He grew up playing baseball, didn't play anything outside of, you know, just, you know, little league, played a little bit in high school. And then after that, you know, he kind of went on to his career from there, went to USF and, graduated from there and then, you know, started his career.
Yeah, cool. So you get drafted by the Rangers. You hold off a year, then you do accept it. I guess it was it fall and then spring? It wasn't a full year that you had to wait to be drafted again, was it?
No, it wasn't a full year because I guess it was that June I got drafted, having the Tommy John surgery, mm-hmm. started the rehab and through that, and then signed that next year with St. Pete Junior College and then played that season with them.
So you had the scholarship. I'm just more curious about this. You had the full scholarship. Surgery comes. Did they, like, say, okay, oh, well, sorry about that. I think we're going to How did that work?
That's a great question. My mother could probably answer that a lot better because for me, I was just like, I just need to get healthy. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we just ended up saying no to LSU basically because I had to make the decision. Am I going to sign as a draft and follow? And do I want to prove myself, first get healthy,
right.
and then prove myself to come back and then pitch with JUCO? Now, if I did sign with LSU, I'm sure they would have took me under their wings, rehabbed with them, potentially pitch that next season with them, and then, you know, went that route. But for me, I was like, you know, I wouldn't say I was a scholar, you know, carried a, you know, enough high GPA average to be able to, you know, be on the field. And, and again, just going through those tough times, man, you know, when you feel like you got the world by the ball, so to speak, and, and you know, everyone's saying you're going to be, you know, signing for millions of dollars out of high school. And, you know, I was just a good old boy from Pinellas Park that was just trying to play a game that I loved. And
yeah,
it's pretty intense.
Did, so you said, I guess when you're a junior, that you sort of felt like, gee, maybe I could make something out of this as a career. Were scouts coming around then, or was it more when you started participating in those All-Star showcases?
I think it really happened in those showcases because there was a little bit of talent, you know, in the area at that time. The bigger high schools, I think, were like Seminole High School, Dunedin High School. So I think when I would go to, and again, I really didn't like take off. I would say I was throwing mid-80s, high-80s, like sophomore year, which is still hard. But I wasn't getting any specific attention those years. I think everything really kind of came together when I got invited. You know, I had the prototypical body type, 6'4", 6'5", 180 pounds, had a good arm, had pretty good mechanics, and then, you know, just really gained all those miles per hour. And then from there, that's when I got invited to those showcases.
Yeah. So then you're drafted by Texas. You said the second time, I'm like, okay, this is it. I'm going.
Yeah.
And how did that feel? I mean, it had to be, well, here we are. It's the next level.
Yeah. Well, and also there was a tough decision in that. It was like, do I go back into the draft and try to prove my stock? You know, because again, I think as a first rounder, top, if I would have went in the top 10, 20 picks, you're looking at $2-3 million, you know. And as a draft and follow, when you have an injury, you know, coming off of Tommy John at a younger age, Tommy John was, it was around those days. It just wasn't, I don't think the analytics and the proven stature of, you know, proof of how long you can sustain health. But yeah, it was a tough decision because I don't remember exactly if I still could have potentially went to LSU even after junior college. But for me, I think I just decided and made up my mind at that point I wanted to go pro. And then that's when that decision was, do I go back into the draft and try to get bigger money? Because they offered me, you know, a lot less than what I was, you know,
initially thinking. Millions.
Yeah, because as you know, the percentage of even after you get drafted to get to the major leagues, have a substantial career and, and make good money, you know, you you want to try to get everything you can as a bonus to kind of make up for not getting the schooling or, you know, and all that. And they were also offering, you know, monies, you know, towards school outside of the bonus, or that was part of the bonus. But yeah, that it was just a tough decision, you know, for me because, you know, I believed I was going to come back healthy. I did come back healthy. And I guess while we're on it, cool little fun fact that I found out throughout my career is that typically the shelf life of a Tommy John surgery is usually, if you look at the statistics, usually only around 7 to 8 years, I think is like the average shelf life of keeping
afterward, you mean?
Yeah, post Tommy John, you know. And then I was able to go on for, you know, pitch 16 years professionally, 15, 16 years with the Tommy John and never had any issues. So Coco Eaton was the one who did my surgery. And the first surgery went a little wonky because I was having some nerve issues.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up going back in. So we can rewind a little bit here. I can go on and on. My story's pretty in-depth, but had the surgery right after that second game, you know, when got checked out, everyone said, yep, you've got a torn ACL.
And by the way, that second game, you started the game and you were like on fire, right?
Well, I started the game and I never got out of the first inning.
Oh, okay.
Well, the first game went well.
I
think I pitched well. You know, all the scouts were showing up. I think 20, 30 scouts. Come out to the second game, you know, threw a pretty long bullpen, showing off, you know, and then I think I was probably 15, 20 pitches in that first inning. I think it was against St. Pete High. I still have some friends that are on that team, that were on that team till this day. But I felt one pitch, felt it.
Wow.
Stabbing pain right in the elbow. It was tough. I mean, I was like, I did something wrong, you know, it's something bad here. Didn't even really know what Tommy John was at the time. And, you know, come to find out after going to see Coco Eaton, he's like, you've got a torn UCL. And basically, if you want to continue on with baseball, which, of course, I wanted to, you're going to need the surgery.
Yeah.
So he did the surgery. And I had a little bit of scar tissue, I think, that built up along that nerve in the elbow.
Mm-hmm.
So I was having a little numbness in my hands. And come to find out, there was basically compression on the nerve. And because I went to go and visit the Texas Rangers after they had drafted me, and they're the ones who found that. They're the ones who found that I was having, they did like the sensory test on my hand, and they had found out that, you know, something's not right here. Mm-hmm. So ultimately, I think that they might have negated the contract, you know, too. And it's fine because I wasn't going to sign anyways. You know, I was going to, you know, prove myself coming back healthy. And then I ended up having Dr. Andrews go in and clean up around the nerve.
Who was a big deal back then.
Arguably Andrews. One of the best, you know, sports physicians.
In the country.
In the country.
Yeah.
So he was great. Went in there, shaved it down, cleaned it up, and then continued the rehab with Larry, and then was able to come back fully healthy.
Yeah, and then, okay, so then you're in the minors for 3-4 years.
Yep.
Eventually, you got traded to the Reds.
Yep.
Which turned out to be a pretty good deal for you. You had a real nice run with the Reds.
Oh, yeah. That was the second time I got traded because I made it to the major leagues with the Texas Rangers.
Correct.
And I think it was a deal between me. It was me and John Danks that went over to Chicago White Sox for a couple guys and pitched a, you know, full season. Didn't have a great full season in the major leagues, but, you know, that was a long reliever. Pitched every 5, 10 days, whatever it was, and came back the next year, made the team out of spring training, and then did well that season and got traded at the deadline. That's when I got traded for Ken Griffey Jr. over to the Reds.
That's a good trivia question.
Yeah.
Ken Griffey Jr.
Yeah. Favorite player growing up? I'm pretty sure when the press called my hotel room that morning, I hung up on him because I thought it was someone messing around with me.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Yeah, I was like, wait, no, it's someone's kidding with me. I didn't have an alias, so I thought, you know, maybe someone could have been messing with me. So, you know, hung the phone up. 5 minutes later, get a call from Kenny Williams. And Kenny said, you know, we wanted to make a move at the deadline. They were looking for a bat. That was the year, I think it was 08 when the White Sox came, played the Tampa Devil Rays in the first round of the playoffs, and they ended up taking down the Chicago White Sox, and they went on to go to the World Series that year.
Yeah.
So then went to the Reds, like you said, was the best thing that could have happened for me. Was around a bunch of veteran guys in the bullpen, taught me, you know, certain things, and a couple of those guys were retiring, and I was able to take over the setup role, and that's when, you know, I was, you know, cranking a lot. I had Dusty Baker as my manager, which was a godsend. That guy was absolutely incredible. still have a relationship with him till this day, and great mentor for me as well. And had a good run for 3 or 4 years, and then that's when my shoulder started acting up.
Yeah, and before we get to the shoulder, you were a workhorse. I mean, 50, 60, 70 games a year, I think, for like that 2009 to 2011. Mm-hmm. You were really cranking it out.
Yeah, I was a guy who had a very strong arm, multiple pitches, was able to get righties and lefties out, and I think Dusty knew that. Always started the season slow for some reason, but then once I kicked in gear, I proved myself to be able to be out there, and instead of, man, that's our job, you know, to be able to shut down whoever it is to get to the closer. And I think I led Major League Baseball for 3 years straight of most games pitched. I was like 75, 77, 82 games.
Right.
So, you know, I asked for the ball, though, you know, and they always, you know, Dusty's got this, whatever it is, you know, stigma. You know, they say that he likes to use and abuse pitchers. They use the carry, you know, the Mark Pryor and the Kerry Wood thing and all that, but he was always checking on me, and I always wanted the ball, especially when you're a reliever and you throw a 10 ERA up in the first month of April. I got to get that ERA down,
yeah,
man.
Yeah.
So, and I pitched really well throughout the season, those 3 years. And I love my time in Cincinnati. Had a really good time. We went to the playoffs.
2010, right?
2010, 2011. Yep.
Yeah. So, speaking of Dusty, I've read and heard, you know, what a great manager he was, guy to play for. What were your recollections of Dusty?
Loved him. Great players coach. We also had David Price, too, at the time, who was a wonderful pitching coach. I thought that they worked great together. You know, I was just a young kid. I went out there and just throw fireballs, man. But they were always making sure I'm doing well. You know, if I was going through any mental struggles or whatever, just was not pitching well, and, you know, Dusty would always call me in the office, say, how you doing, man? What's going on? You know, how's family? How's, you know, life? How's a very personable guy that truly cared about his players, and arguably probably my favorite manager after, you know, having a lot of great managers. And that's not speaking down on any of the Buck Showalters or the Ozzie Guillens or the Walt Weiss's. I mean, I had some really good managers, and all those guys were great too, but Dusty just was one of those guys, man, that just, you know, he always had your back.
Yeah.
And he always had a good story to tell you, and he made the game fun.
Yeah, yeah. So 2011, 2012 comes, the shoulder issues. How did that happen, or what? Was there any warning that something was going on, or?
No, I mean, I literally went into that spring training, just signed a 2-year deal, was close to not signing the deal just because I had thrown my stock was very high. I was one of the top setup men in the game, got a good 2-year deal, and was on the fence of signing it because I was like, I can pitch 1 year, I'll be a free agent. And the Reds offered me a great contract, and I signed it. And unfortunately, it was like, as we were in games and spring training, I just, shoulders started barking. You know, started feeling pain in my shoulder, and I'm like, gosh, what's going on here? Because I took a lot of pride in my off seasons. I worked really hard on my diet, on my training. Of course, had Larry Mayo, which was one of the best. You know, he pushed me, and I was always prepared. Felt good going into that spring training, and then just out of nowhere, I don't know if it was one pitch or just started feeling an ache in my shoulder. And essentially what I had done was I had a slight tear in my labrum, and they called it like a rent tear in my capsule. So we battled through that, you know, did everything we could do to try to figure out what was going on with my shoulder. I spent the whole year on the DL. Came back a couple times while I was on the DL to pitch, but I just couldn't really let it go. So shoulders are very complicated, as you know. Elbow was great, shoulder not so great. So we pulled out all the stops. You know, we tried the PRP treatments, we tried the this, that, and other thing, and just couldn't figure it out. And Long story short, a year and a half later, I went and saw a thoracic outlet surgeon. So thoracic outlet is essentially where you take your two scalenes out of your neck, you pull your first rib out, major surgery. And he wasn't 100% this was going to fix it. So another long story here that I'm going to keep short. Had the surgery, they keep you in the hospital for 3 days, and then they want you to stay in the hotel room for 4 days. My second night in the hotel, 5 days after surgery, I started feeling terrible. I was running a high fever, bed sweats the whole nine, went and saw the doctor. He said, go ahead and go home. Surprisingly, run a couple tests. He's like, you're probably immune system's down. So I fly home, start feeling worse. This is while my wife has her second child on the way. And I admit myself to the Tampa General Hospital. They do pictures, and I had a softball-sized abscess, staph in my chest. So, again, long story short, doctor from St. Louis says, don't put your hands on him. He's got to fly back up to St. Louis. Fly back up to St. Louis, cleans it up. I was on my deathbed. Thank God it never went sepsis. And Lord willing, I healed up. Mm-hmm. And I was able to rehab with Larry again that off season, and I came back healthy. No shoulder, no pain shoulder. Wow. No shoulder, my pain. No, the neck. The rehab's not bad after the thoracic outlet. 2-3 months off, and did the rehab. Came back, and that's when the Colorado Rockies took a chance at me. Mm-hmm. Went to big league camp with them, pitching A ball for. Triple A, I think, for like a month, and then got called up and finished the season with them. So it was really cool.
Wow. So just to go back, so people understand, it was spring training, and then you missed the whole season.
Missed that whole season, and then I think it was that next season when I had done the thoracic outlet.
Wow, so you came back from the dead.
Basically.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. That's softball. I just can't imagine that.
Oh,
in my chest.
It was massive, they said. It was such a distinct area where to have a massive infection,
mm-hmm.
that they were like, don't put your hands on him. So I had to jump back on the plane and go to St. Louis.
But that was the guy who told you to go home?
That was the guy who told me to go home. And he is, not to call anybody out, but he was arguably the best thoracic outlet surgeon in the country.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
We've got a couple more minutes here. You kind of pitched for a couple different teams. You're retired. You were in the majors for a while. Something to be proud of. What are you up to these days?
So I've got two daughters. I've got a 12-year-old daughter over at Skycrest Christian, and I've got a 14-year-old who just started freshman year at Calvary. Both volleyball players, play the high-level volleyball, and mm-hmm. That I feel like that's our life, is giving a lot of time and attention to them for school and sports. And past that, I own a wood business. I own a reclaimed barn wood business that I've owned for about 10 years now. Very interesting. I'd also been in investing in
wait, what is a wood,
So reclaimed barn wood essentially is old wood that is now used for aesthetic purposes, cosmetic, interior, mm-hmm. exterior. I think you'll see it around town, whether it's old wood flooring, wood walls, mantles. So we do a lot of really cool stuff.
Gotcha.
We're located out of Tampa Bay. It's called Coast to Coast Barnwood. Been doing that for about 9 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And I've also had my hands in construction, custom home building, flipping homes, doing different investment things in real estate. And last but not least, we are starting a pet boarding business, me and my wife. We've been very involved in the pet community. We've been running one out of our house for a couple of years now, and we do a lot with the community with, fostering animals and things of that nature. And my wife had a calling to do that, and now we're going to open up our own pet pet boarding business here in the Clearwater area.
Wow, you got a lot going on in your retirement.
Yeah, not so much retired from baseball.
There you go. Real quick, did you get to games much anymore?
I do. I try to pop into the Rays games here and there. Good buddy of mine I grew up with, Doug Wechter, of course.
Sure.
Everybody knows Doug. Uh-huh. We keep in touch, and I try to pop into at least a few games a year and go see him, support the local team, and I'm just truly blown away by how they get it done every year with the salary that they have, and that's a large tribute to management across the board.
A lot of what they do now is, it's not even small ball; it's tiny ball.
It's tiny bunch. Ball.
It's crazy. I like that. I should copyright that.
Tiny ball. I like that.
Yeah. Well, listen, this was great, Nick. Thanks so much. It's been a great conversation. I appreciate you coming on, and. This has been Play Ball with Dan Hirschberg. We'll see you again next time. If you want to reach out to me in the meantime, go to Facebook, Danny Baseball 56. Thanks a lot. Talk to you next time.